Welcome back to the podcast for MinSpec, the Minnesota Speculative Fiction Writers Group. This is Episode 5, Creating Characters, Part 2 of 2.
I'll try to leave some time at the end here for questions. So, your examples were great. In fact, I would say the underlying psychology of these characters is something that really fascinates me. And as I was looking at books very similar to this, a lot of books have been written about characters, writing good characters, remarkable characters, all sorts of things. A lot of them, though, would get into how you reveal a character, the mechanism by which you reveal a character, but it didn't really get at the character, the core of the character, I guess you'd call it. And for a lot of people, especially a lot of writers that I would read in other groups that I was in, I'd seen the same personality appearing, and then there'd be like this thin veneer of something, like they'd be a tough character, and then they'd have a soft character or the evil character, but underneath, they all sort of thought and talked and acted in the same way. And so I got looking into psychological explanations for what makes a character different. And actually, one of the eye-openers was when I took a Myers-Briggs indicator, or Myers-Briggs evaluation, and saw that there were all sorts of variations, well, actually 16 variations, according to Myers and Briggs, based on some studies or suggestions from Carl Jung. And Myers and Briggs kind of formulated this idea, I think it was back in the 30s, was it not, or was it the 40s? And since then, they've based on their research and dividing personality types up into 16 types, people have really run with that, and there's been just any number of books written about it. It's been kind of morphed into something that businesses use on employees in an attempt to match employees to the kind of work they're doing, or at least help them mesh with types of work. And in fact, books like this go through personalities. This is not designed for fictional characters, it's designed for real people, but it does get into areas like how does an ESTJ, their living situation, you know, the kind of things they like to do, learning, laboring, loving, leisure, this person, Kummerl and Hirsch, we're stuck on L's, so losing out, loving, and then in the end, in a nutshell. And they basically do for each of the 16 personality types. They've got a little catalog here. So, you know, if you want to create a character that's different than you, you can at least investigate this. How many people in here have children? Okay. How many have more than one? Okay. Then you probably know that personality type is something that is, especially as they get older, and you were just talking about that, is almost more genetic than it is coming from their experiences as a child. That'll help form a lot of their opinions and so on, but their basic extroversion, introversion, and the rest of these wonderful letters is something that's kind of like the wiring in their brain that they inherit, more than how they're brought up or how they grow, although that certainly can have influence on them. And once you start to look at how different personality types interact, you begin to realize the value that that gives you as a writer. A good example is The Odd Couple, Walter Matthau, Jack Lemmon. Two characters who I suppose you could go through and type them, but they're just at opposite ends of the spectrum. They're forced to be together, and the whole story is based on those two characters trying to mesh or live together and how impossible it is for them, but they manage somehow. This is something that's used over and over again in film and especially in television. I was just watching the TV series Bones. Classic example, Temperance is a introvert, a sensor, a thinker, and a judger. And her FBI mate, and I can't for the life of me remember his name now.
Billy Booth.
Yeah. He is exactly the opposite. He's an extrovert, he's intuitive, he's a feeling person, and he's a perceptive. He's a guy that, well, he's not so much perceptive, he's a judging type, but they have extreme...
They have to be a little judging end.
Yeah. but they exaggerated the extremes in order to create the characters. Fictional characters often are exaggerations of real life people. I was just thinking as you were describing this guy that was being faced with, you know, cops coming in, and the description of his what's going through his mind is actually the author working on giving you his state of mind, and that state of mind would have to be consistent for you. You know, if you're reading that section, it has to be consistent throughout the book. He can't say, "I have another instant like that," where he, turns into a blubbering mass and falls down on the floor saying, "Don't shoot me." It just wouldn't work. So you have to kind of work at consistency in character.
I think that they, I'm going to disagree with you. There are times when you have contradiction in character, but the contradictions are interesting because they're having those moments with a different person or a different situation where it becomes even more fascinating because we all are somewhat contradictory. I'm not saying you're completely wrong, but I'm saying that there's a point where going against character type in a specific situation can be very illuminating.
Yeah, there has to be a reason for it.
Possibly. Yes, right. And that's where you can reveal things about a character. In fact, I would strongly say that having extremes in this area, it makes it easier to write a character than having someone who goes right down the middle. Mm-hmm. And those extremes can be a flaw even in their character. In fact, they talk about this in these books. People who go off the edge and being an extrovert or off the edge and being totally objective generally are seen as personalities. And the Myers-Briggs doesn't deal with abnormal personalities. Usually they're considering these are functioning human beings, not crazed sociopaths. But if you exaggerate areas, you oftentimes give a character something, a part of their character that needs work. And that part can be a big part of the story. How they deal with, say, they're a judging person. A good story that comes to mind is To Kill a Mockingbird. Atticus is he's a lawyer. He's a judging person. What happens in the story, I assume everyone here has read To Kill a Mockingbird. Okay. He takes on a case, Tom Robbins. The guy is, you know, patently innocent, but he's in a town that is prejudiced against him. He's a black man, accused of raping a woman, a white woman. And he's killed by, we don't know exactly, they say in the story that he was killed trying to escape, but we kind of doubt that. But at the end of the story, his children are threatened because he was the lawyer defending Tom Robbins, and the family that was related to and probably the guy that was actually raping the woman goes after his children. And Boo Radley, who has been off in the wings, the kids have been fascinated with, has a chance to come out of the house he's been hiding in for ages and ages and literally kill Yule, the fellow that's attacking the kids. Atticus is a lawyer. He realizes that Yule killed him, and his first thought is, well, he's going to have to go to trial. Now, what's really going on here is Atticus is a guy that has gone off the scales in the judging area. And the sheriff actually is the one that says, listen, justice has been served here. It may not be the kind of justice that the law would say is right, but justice has been served. Leave it alone. And that, in a sense, is sort of the gist or the thrust of the story, is that in a totally unjust system that he was trying to work within, that justice essentially could be served and it would go outside of his idea of justice. And I think there are other stories that work with people who have exaggerated personality preferences. And that's what these all are, is preferences, the way you'd like to work on, or where you'd be comfortable. Say, after a combat scene or something, does the soldier that's your hero want to go off with his buddies and party, or does he just want to go back to his bunk and read a book or listen to music?
And it's also, I think, good to remember that as a preference, it doesn't mean that you don't necessarily have skill in the other area.
Exactly.
Or that you might necessarily follow your preference. Yep. He might like to go back to his bunk and read a book, mm-hmm. but he might see some value, some practical value in going out with us.
And there are even stories in which just coming to the point where he does go out with his buddies to party at the end of the story shows that he's accepted.
He's grown somehow.
Yeah, he's grown somehow. He sees that there's a value in that. Whereas if he's an extreme introvert and he just doesn't associate with people, you see, that's not going to work if you're in a combat situation or what have you. So I would strongly suggest, looking at personality, type talk, what type am I? There's all sorts of books here. And other, like, online places you can take tests, start thinking about, when you're writing, the personality types and how just the way they think is going to bring conflict into your story. Someone who is, say, a perceptive type and someone who's a judging type are not going to get along. The judging type's going to want closure, decision, and the perceptive type wants to be more flexible. They're going to want options. They're going to want to get everybody's opinion. Oftentimes, personality types clash, and I don't really have time to get into that because I want to read some of the stories, and then we're going to type some of these and talk about them a little more. So, but I would strongly suggest looking it up and say if you've got a situation in your story where you're not quite feeling that your character's talking to you, taking a personality test for them might just help a bit. It might just, if you're forced to look at what this person would do in their own life that they would prefer to do, it might just open up for you some facet of their personality you hadn't thought about before. So, who would like to go first with reading a story? And then we're all going to use our handy-dandy Myers-Briggs indicator to kind of type this. And don't tell us what your character's type was. Their letters, their four letters. We'll try to guess it based on your story. Who wants to read first?
Pat. Oh, gosh, that's what you're next door. So, yeah, so I wrote this as a piece of a backstory that ended up being quite interesting to me. Aiden, good shooting, said the lieutenant. Hop up here a moment. He gestured to the supply countertop. I need to talk to you about something important. Good shooting. That meant she'd qualified as expert. couldn't wait to tell Joseph. She boosted herself up onto the countertop. This close, there was no hiding the pattern on her skirt. Cartoon figures of baby animals. It was her mother's favorite. She was 7, and she hated it. The lieutenant held out his hand. She showed him the flechette pistol safety was on, snapped out the magazine, then handed both over to him. Aiden, you know Joseph is very sick. She nodded. He hadn't walked her home from school or climbed with her in the you-will-never-go-there-again-I'm-your-mother maintenance shafts this whole week. Mom has new medicine for him. The lieutenant placed his hand on her shoulder. Joseph is dying. There is nothing medical can do. I'm sorry. No, you're wrong. He's getting better. I'm very sorry, Aiden. It is old age. Too many of his organs have stopped working. He will die very soon. Not her Joseph, no. Had she played too rough? Had she hurt him? Soon his mind won't work right. He won't know who you are, and he will be in a lot of pain. I know he's been your playmate all your life. Did you know he's been with your mother almost all of her life? She shook her head, no. Your mother loves Joseph so very much, she won't believe he's dying. You and I are Keld. We can face difficult facts, facts the Polis can't face. She nodded. Her parents loved her, and they tried so hard to hide they didn't like her. They hated that she was a Keld. They hated that she was a freak, a genetic insurance policy brought to life. Most of all, they hated that it had happened to them. Aiden, Joseph is an Amer. The Keld are responsible for Amer, and if they act badly or if the Polis owners don't take good care of them. Medical came to me. I'm coming to you. Can you take responsibility for Joseph? It's a scene change. Aiden set the mugs down on Joseph's bedside table. Joseph was curled up deep in the green branches of his nest. He hadn't moved since she entered his room. He looked normal to her, but he didn't smell right. He smelled bad, sour. Joseph. No movement. Much louder. Joseph. His eyelids flickered. Aiden, he croaked. I brought you iced Nansa fruit drink. He closed his eyes. You poor thing. She started scratching him behind one ear, worked her way down behind his cheek flap to his chin and up to his other ear. He made contented little grunts as she dug her fingers into his thick fur. When she pulled her hand back, her fingers were covered with fur that had fallen out. That didn't happen yesterday. Joseph, drink your iced Nansa. No response. She edged her voice with command. Joseph, drink your juice. That felt bad. She'd never used a command voice on Joseph. His eyes opened and he struggled to lift a hand towards his mug. Hands that dwarfed her father's. Powerful arms that threw her high enough into the air to make her shriek with delight and her mother forbid he ever do it again. He couldn't raise that arm off his bed. She stroked his face and felt the tears start to well in her eyes. I'll help you. She cradled the mug into his two hands and guided it to his mouth. Joseph, do, he said. Yes, Joseph, you drink. I'll help just a little. He took a first sip, and then, seeming invigorated by the taste, took a long drink. Good, Joseph, you drank it all gone. Joseph, Aiden thank. Her throat too constricted to speak, she nodded and tried to smile. She put the mug back on the table and climbed up into his nest. She snuggled up next to him like she used to do when she was little and tucked his arms around her. He grunted with satisfaction. She was in that same position an hour later, cheeks wet with a fresh stream of tears, when her mother came into the room. Aiden, where did you get this? Her mother held out a small brown vial towards Aiden. This is very dangerous. Her mother looked at Joseph and then at her. That's when her mother started to scream.
All right.
Anyone want to venture a comment on whether we have an introvert or an extrovert here?
Introvert.
She seems very self-contained.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say Debo's definitely introvert.
Is she gathering information about the illness?
or is she more intuitive? Does she want facts about from the doctor, for the medical, from her father, or is she more relying on her intuition about whether or not this was her fault or what the illness is all about? That's sort of what I'm asking. Is she sort of a sensing person or an intuitive person?
Sensing, I'd say. And she notices the hair falling out. She notices the difference in his movement when she's actually looking at him.
Mm-hmm. So she relies on her five senses more than she would on her intuitive understanding of his illness, maybe?
It seems like it.
Anyone? That one, to me, was a little bit wobbly. Could be either way, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh.
He does notice a lot of details.
Yeah.
The details, the fur, and the difference in his behavior mm-hmm. versus the last time she'd seen him.
Mm-hmm. And her dislike of the skirt was what made me think she was sensing even before they got.
Mm-hmm. All right. As far as in decision making, we didn't really. Know for sure. You kind of left us in the air if this vial had been given to them, unless I didn't pick, or given to the pet. Maybe I didn't pick that up. It was sort of implied.
It was given to him in the juice, yeah. I was pretty clear of it.
Okay. Okay.
And I think that that was, even though it's a very emotional scene for her, I felt that was a thinking thing to do. She was mm-hmm. overriding her emotions very hard to do that.
Mm-hmm. She responded to a lot of really rational arguments from the doctor.
No, but she didn't respond to the rational arguments. It was only once she actually saw how he was doing that she made the decision.
But she already had the juice when she went in.
She had the juice in her hands. I think she'd already made the decision.
Yeah, where did the decision come from? Was it the fur coming off? I mean, she might have... That's one thing in writing. If you want it to be an objective kind of decision, you have to provide your character with... If they're using their senses... They would have, say, asked the doctor, well, you know, have you had a second opinion of this? What exactly?
At seven?
It could be. Well, actually, young children, it's mostly they'll take after their parents at this stage of the game. But if it were an older character.
But she's living
it from her parents. She already knows she's not her parents. She's something else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Something violent that isn't her parents.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And in that case, she would have probably developed a personality that would have some leanings one way or the other in her preferences. So, what about judging and perceptive? That's usually the implementation, which she, you know, what made her decide this is it, we want closure, or, you know.
This seems very decisive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's kind of a very controlling act. I mean, mm-hmm. There's no wobbling on that one. It's either or.
Yeah.
So
she's a judging type. And she's not asking for options and what else she might do. Okay, great.
So was that what?
Yeah, so when I took the test for her, she was ISTJ, strongly introverted. So distinctively expressed introvert, moderately expressed sensing, which sort of matches with your indecision. Very expressed thinking, very expressed judging.
So that seemed to line up with what you were going for?
And I wasn't attempting to evoke those characteristics.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that I hadn't expected to do an analysis to see if those characteristics came forward as more trying to do some other sorts of things. And I cheated. I wrote longer than a page. But
Is this one of the other races of the polis that we haven't met yet?
No, this is backstory for Aiden. So the Aimers, they come and go. They're sort of like pets or dogs or animals that have been... raised and have more intelligence than they would normally would have. So he's a baboon or a orangutan, sort of the model in my mind, but has the power of speech and greater thought than simple ape would have.
Okay. Great.
Any other? Go next. Mine has some interesting parallels to that one, actually.
Okay.
Dr. Hoffman pressed old Eisenhower's stomach, looked into his eyes, peeled back his lip. He looked up at Aki. He threw up. He also was too tired to walk here. Aki's heels bumped against the side of the counter. I believe he ate my father's sock on Thursday. He often does this. Eat socks? How long has his gum been pale? I did not notice. I am sorry. It's not good. Hoffman stared down and touched the beagle's belly again, gently. I think he's bleeding inside. He must be in considerable pain. He is very stoical. Hoffman's lips tightened. You shouldn't have to be doing this. Where's your mother? Please, sir, this is my dog, left to me by my grandmother. How must I care for him? Dr. Hoffman hesitated, rubbing his hand on his smock. I see, Aki said. How long, please? Hoffman sighed and threw up his hands. A few days, maybe. Not happy days. No. Usually in situations like this, I'd put him to sleep now. That's what I advise. Aki gave him a long, considering look. Hoffman looked away from those serious eyes. To be quite clear, Aki said, you are not talking about sleep. An injection. He really would go to sleep and not awaken. Aki hopped down from the counter and went to lay her hands on the old dog's head. He snuffled into her palm, and she grabbed a long, silky ear and ran it through her fingers. May I consider? Of course. Wait here while I see my next patient out back. Hoffman was looking down the throat of an uncooperative sheep when Aki found him in the fenced backyard. She stood politely, waiting to be noticed. Hoffman looked up and gave a wry grin. Nothing, he said, is ever quite as sick as a sick sheep. It seemed to me you were not sure what is wrong with him. I'm sure something is seriously wrong, probably an intestinal blockage, but there's no way to be sure, you know, before. Can he not be saved? Hoffman shoved a large white pill down the sheep's throat and held her head and clamped the muzzle shut with the other hand until she swallowed it. He stood wiping his hands. Not by me. You could take him up to Raleigh and they might be able to do something there, but that would cost over $1,000. Aki shook her head sadly. That is not a practical plan. I have only $57. She sat on the back step and stared at the sheep, who had retired to the far corner to look miserable. I do not wish to question your expertise, sir, but I should like to be certain. I do not like to make a mistake. Dr. Hoffman sat beside her. Dogs don't like to show when they're hurting. I'm afraid tomorrow will be much worse for him. You must show me how to tell if it is worse, and I will bring him back then. Tomorrow is Sunday, he said gently. The office is closed. I see. Aki leaned forward to peer over her knees at the toes of her sneakers. Then you must show me how to give this injection. What? No, I can't give a little girl a deadly syringe. I'm nearly 11, sir. I am merely small. It's out of the question. How could you even think to do this yourself? If it is truly a kindness, sir, I believe I could. No. Tell you what, I'll drop by tomorrow morning. You're just down the road, right? Thank you, sir. Yes, at the Starlight Lanes and Chow Main. Would you like help to load him back on your wagon? Aki stood. I will take care of him, sir. Thank you.
Okay.
That's very sad, Andre.
Terry's created the sheep jokes, otherwise it would have been a total tear-jerker.
Yeah.
Yeah, Terry's created this assignment that's going to leave us all depressed the rest of the
time.
Well,
I'm going to go scoop up my cat and cuddle her.
Yeah.
clearly, tea, that's very powerful.
Yeah, very clearly.
And Jay, for sure.
And I think sensing-wise, definitely an S.
I think she's a little introverted because she's very straightforward. Extroverted, she's very straightforward. I don't think she's like super on the extrovert scale, but she's comfortable talking to people and being
it's
very
a hard
direct.
Exercise to tell the introvert extrovert thing.
Mm-hmm. It kind of is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, she seemed almost more perceptive to me. She really wanted to keep her options open as long as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but she also wanted control over her dog's fate.
Yeah, she wanted control.
She was not willing to relinquish control to that to that pet. She did not believe that his was the final say.
I think a strong thinking type would be, and you know, we didn't see the coup de grace where she jabs the dog, but. She did have it in her to do it, and so she could be a judging person. She did want to keep her options, but I would say there was no question that the dog was going to buy it, and either the vet was going to give it to her, but she wanted to do it herself, which to me almost argues for being a feeling person, because in a sense she wanted it. It was a personal thing to her. To deal with it.
But yeah, but really seemed to want evidence and facts.
She was a censor.
She doesn't have to be 100% one way or the other. Well,
of course the emotion's going to come in, but I still think she's very thinking.
Yep.
It's just thinking about something that's very personal.
Yeah. And I would assume that for her, simply because I sense she's a person who doesn't need other people, she can interact with other people, but I get the sense she could do perfectly well on her own. Yeah, she needs people for other information, then she'll go to them, but otherwise she seems very self-contained.
Had she said she had to go home with the dog and talk with her family, I would have said she's probably an extrovert, but she didn't really mention that.
Yeah, it's all her.
Looking at her shoes was a very introverted thing to do. I thought that that really made me think
putting taking care of the dog at the end herself too, wanting to take care of, put it in the wagon. She didn't want help,
and she wanted to be by herself to think in the room, more conversation with the doctor. That felt more like an introvert process to me.
No, in writing, there's no reference to going talking to her mother or father or siblings or anybody else. She had made the decision,
and it's her dog. She wouldn't bring her mother with her to
All right.
So what type did you...
Here's the thing. This is a new character that I have not written a scene with before. I've just been thinking about her. And so I feel that I get to know the character by writing the scene more so than by trying to take a test beforehand. But I did, in this case, take the test beforehand, so I'm not sure how close, if I did it again, whether I would have the same result. But when I took the test, it came up INFP, but it was right near the middle on all of that.
Interesting, because that's kind of in the eye.
I think she'll come out more of a T. But it's, I agree with you about getting to know the characters right from.
Yeah, this is definitely, as you write, you get to know your character. And this is obviously, since you don't have if you're creating your own character, not basing it on someone you know, this is in flux. And it's nice, though, that if you can eventually settle on a personality, a core personality that can, function fairly consistently, and then be pressed into maybe having to change a little bit for circumstances. So do you think we can get one more in, or should we do questions?
I actually stuck with the one page thing. This is actually a character that I haven't written anything about yet either. She's the main character for the novel I'm thinking about. I'm afraid that our guest was right on the nose, Ms. Papalu. The lump under Snookum's chin was cancer. The vet, a small, round-faced man with faded blonde hair, looked up at me as he spoke with carefully kind eyes. I stared back at his balding pate and felt my lips tighten slightly, the same gesture I might make if someone had stuck a needle in me. The aging parrot under discussion looked up from ripping at the last few tufts of his green plumage and gave me a long, cold stare. Balls! He squawked. He was still about as stable as Tiger Woods' love life after the anesthesia the doc had used for the biopsy this morning, and the short, sharp plucking motions made him look like he was moments away from falling off the end of the traveling perch Grans had built for him herself. The only thing Bert and Doctor had in common was the wary distance they were keeping from me. I have that effect on people. And, I prompted after a long moment. Well, he shuffled the papers in his hand, tapping the bottom of the stack against the edge of the exam table once, twice, three times. I'm afraid the news isn't good. The growth is malignant and intruding into the side of his skull. We weren't able to remove it all. I'm afraid he only has a few days to live, a couple of weeks at the outside. I nodded comprehension of this while he kept searching my face for more of a reaction. I'm sorry. Your grandmother was a fine woman, Mr. Pellup, and I know Snuggums is all you have left of her, but the most merciful thing. He's not a part of her, I ground out. He's a fucking parrot. If he's got to go, put him down. Let him stop. I stared at the ugly, ungrateful bird for one last long moment, remembering how much more alive and happy he'd been when Gran was taking care of him, not me. Then I turned on my heel and swung open the door. Send me the bill.
All right. I was hoping we'd get one where we had a character who didn't like their pet.
My good riddance.
I'm going to say an I.
Well...
It came out that way because I couldn't honestly imagine the character choosing to have a pet. So it had to be something that she
that ended up with. Okay. That's cool. I like that.
Well, introvert, extrovert?
I don't know.
Thinking?
I
think
that's extrovert. Oh, really?
Because she drives people away, but she cares about it.
Uh-huh.
So she wants some connection.
I still say introvert.
Yeah, I'm not even knowing why I'm saying thinking introvert, but just she just seems like an introvert, but I guess I'm making all these assumptions based on her personality, that she just seems like somebody who wouldn't be relating to other people real well.
She seems like somebody who doesn't like other people very well.
Yeah, I just get,
She interacts in the with the doctor in a way that doesn't suggest that she particularly cares
what he thinks of her. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, not at all.
Well,
yeah.
And I wonder if writing from first person might make you lean more towards introvert because they're always...
Yeah, you're in their head. Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I had the character that I tested got high extrovert marks, and he doesn't give a rat's ass what anyone thinks of him.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, most people are afraid of him.
But if you work hard at the getting people to be afraid of you, mm-hmm. you're obviously interacting with people a lot and get off on interacting. Yeah. So I can see, you know, the antisocial extrovert.
Yeah, exactly. So she could be an antisocial extrovert. She could hate people.
It seems pretty darn outspoken for an introvert, but I guess there are mean introverts.
Well, yeah.
You know, you don't have a mean versus sweet.
No. All right, is this person a sensing type or an intuitive type? Does she...
I'd say sensing, you know, he's just a damn bird, you know, that's pretty practical, I guess, if that's being sensitive.
I think you're gonna judge her, too.
Yeah, she definitely wants closure.
I think you can rule out fear.
I mean,
yeah, kind of expected her to grab the bird and bring its neck. Oh, really?
Here, I'll take it.
By the way, I have to give you credit.
Warm up the oven. We're having turkey tonight.
That was great. It you gave us not only a great picture of her, but it also an excellent picture of the bird.
And grandma. This was grandma's bird.
Yeah,
in balls. Family.
All right. Well, any other comments? Otherwise, if there's questions for
did
either
you,
of us.
Could I ask, did you test?
Yeah, I tested
her.
She actually came out INTJ.
Okay.
Really?
I'm not quite sure why she came out intuitive.
Well, the T and the J certainly are.
Yeah, the T and the J. She was the only one that was strong, while the rest of them were, I guess, marginal or weakly.
See, the thing is that it wasn't really a high-stakes decision.
No.
No.
Yeah.
Although,
well, to somebody it would be. If you love your bird, it would be a high-stakes, but if you don't. Yeah.
Well, she did look after the bird until it got cancer or whatever. I mean, she could have just, you know, right after Grandma passed away. Who's going to know?
So there we have a clue on her relationship with her grandmother, probably.
Well, yeah.
Maybe she's going to respect her grandma.
And if she had kept the bird alive, say if you'd thrown in that the rest of the family knew she was taking care of grandma's bird, that would have really classified her as an extrovert because she cared what the rest of the family thought, even though she didn't like the bird. So little things like that help when you're creating a character. If you can kind of pigeonhole,
she's turning back to her.
But something like that can help you as a writer decide, in this simple case, grandma's died. I'm looking after her damn bird. I don't like the bird. Why am I looking after the bird? Well, it's because you care what the rest of the family thinks about you and how you're taking care of, grandma's bird. Perhaps an introvert would look after the bird as well, but it would possibly be more likely that someone who really cares about other people, who's a feeling person, would care about that bird. And she doesn't strike me as a feeling person in this scene, but the fact that she looked after the bird might actually make her a feeling person.
She talks about how the bird was so much happier with Grandma compared to how the bird's feeling now, so that's really different.
Yeah, well, and you can give that character some depth by changing types. But this character goes home and starts to cry, and we see that she really did care. She's putting on front, so has a dual.
Sure,
and she maybe isn't crying about the bird. She's crying about grandma.
Yeah.
Well, it could just be she's really just frustrated with the bird because she's tried all she can in here. Mm-hmm. The bird goes and has a brain tumor and is dying, and let's just get it over with. I'm frustrated. Dealing with this situation, I cannot tolerate it anymore.
And it doesn't have to be a nice person. She could be thinking just good money after bad.
I can see that this could be really helpful in making sure that your character is behaving consistently across different situations.
Yeah.
And you could do it two ways. I mean, you could do it as your main character. You could do it before the climax and how they are after.
Well, if you, my feeling is...
I came out pretty spot on with what I expected in the game.
Is if you've got a character that's especially if they're trying to be consistent in a situation where they can't, where their personality is just not going to, business as usual is just not going to cut it. They're going to have to break maybe one or two or more of their preferences, cross over and do something differently. And that can be a major plot twist or an element of your plot is, what internally is happening to that person.
Internal conflict.
That soldier we talked about goes out with his buddies, but he's still an introvert, so... Mm-hmm. So he's not going to be behaving like life of the party. He's maybe going to be in the corner, nursing his beard, man a few words.
Well, officer and a gentleman, classic example, a guy who didn't want to have anything to do because of his personality type, anything to do with the rest of his class as he was learning how to become a fighter pilot. His internal conflict was learning to trust people and to, be part of a team.
Allow intimacy eventually.
Yes, and at the end, that's exactly what he does. He could win, I think it's a rally, an exercise rally or a run that they're doing, and rather than doing that, he goes back to help a teammate. So he wouldn't have done that at the beginning of the movie.
I've forgotten that part because all I remember is doesn't.
Well, see, he never could have reached that point unless he went back and learned.
Yeah. Whereas I kept thinking to myself that Deborah needed to do something else with her life. Honestly, I was so mad at her for not, you know, the heroine, for not, you know, for relying entirely on a guy to
To get her out of her life.
Out of her life. That was that. That made me so mad.
That was the pinnacle of her existence, was that he came in and carried her off.
Romantic but wrong.
He's, he's lost it here. He's going to be henpecked for the rest of his life. He should have just flown away.
You're just winging this, aren't you?
Well, he's perceptive.
Yes, that's right.
Questions, observations.
This is a good time to mention that on the meetup message board there is a thread for this meeting, so if people wanted to go there and post their exercises that didn't have a chance to get discussed or what highlights they thought came out of this, that would be a good place to do it.
Mm-hmm. Or if you've got other links, resources,
handouts to upload and
yes, so.
Can we share your handout?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Okay.
I have some character. I took a loft class one time, a workshop with the character building, and she gave out some nice worksheets that I could upload where you just fill in all this information that you might not think about you know, a character, their religion, their political.
Yeah, I think I've that been, kind of. I probably have that way back from. It's like hobbies and addictions.
Yeah, just
and
yeah,
everything.
Yeah, you know, stuff that can just, and it helps you sometimes with your plot to have to think about. You know, I never thought about the character's religious views and how that might affect things, because I didn't think about religion in this or whatever.
One thing I really, Dick Francis is my comfort reading, which is why I had examples from his writing, and it's not that from a literary standpoint it's deathless prose, but one thing that I think he does really well is pre-existing complications for his characters. You know, so many novels I feel like were, it's almost like
their lives start
on page one, you know, and Daly's has a lot of things that are already in motion for this character that end up complicating the plot that gets kicked off on page one.
There can be also interesting things, like you were talking about Beyond the Wanted poster, and yet I've had a lot of complaints about people who go, I really love your characters, but I have no idea what they look like. And they get mad at me because I haven't included the physical.
They didn't look in the mirror. And
Sarah was a first-person narrative. And I did not have her do the looking in the mirror thing.
Those are sensor-type people. They want physical and
you have something to hook your imagination into.
I guess I'm going to have a dressmaking scene or something else just for the purpose of the looking in the mirror thing. I don't know. I'll have to come up with something.
Well, something that I discovered over the three books of the same series that I wrote was that my first, you know, I'm a spreadsheet girl, and I had a master character spreadsheet for all of my books, and it's their name, their occupation, their relationships, their religious affiliation, their height, eyes, build, you know, and hair color, and then their personality type. And what I discovered was my very first book, the entire spreadsheet was filled out. Everybody had an assigned eye color, they had a hair color, they had everything, you know. And I tried to put something in every single column. And then what I learned in the second book and became so much more successful with the characters in the second book was I realized that I just needed to establish one personality trait that was really indicative of that character. And it could have fallen under any of those categories, including, you know, I could have no, and I have characters now who have no description whatsoever in height, build, eye color, hair color, but it has a very distinctive personality trait that this person is known for. And as my spreadsheets went on into the third book, it was like I kind of had to make myself comfortable with the incomplete spreadsheet because, you know, okay, this person, because it doesn't matter what their hair and eye color is, it matters how they, you know, how they interact with these characters, and that's what's important to the story.
I think that's why the exercise Terry had us do is such a valuable thing, because real character is revealed by, you know, the, I think, it's revealed by the decisions that people make under pressure.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
And so the attributes, that's useful and you need it, but it doesn't really tell you what their character is. Their character gets revealed by, you know, do they put the dog in the wagon or what do they do?
Yeah.
And that's where you learn what their real character is like.
Prominent just like personality real life. Trait asks every passerby questions 3.
Yeah, really.
Blue, no red.
I did this thing.
I did this thing up back when I did this for the loft, and it's like the text. This is an iceberg, you see, and in the text you have this much, but if you have to know this much, so. Tip of the iceberg, sort of deal.
I wanted to get a quick survey of how many think that we really do need to put some indicative of what the person looks like in there, because I've been reading these books for months now trying to get a sense of what other people feel, and it seems to go both ways. Like, some books that I read said that you could not say anything at all about what your character looks like, especially from the first character point of view, because you will have to contrive something. And it will seem contrived no matter how you do it.
Yeah.
But then you have the people, like my wife, for example, said, don't you dare write the first chapter without saying what she looks like. I want to see what she looks like. And I'm just like, it's contrived, and I know I might have to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think you need enough that your reader doesn't stumble over things. I mean, if you start out thinking that this is, you know,
by the first
that
page,
this is a young person, and 30 pages in, you suddenly find out they're 85, and you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you need to find it out based on how other people react to you. You know, are you attractive? Are you not attractive? You know, are you young? Are you old? Just enough so you can kind of get a feel for who my character is and how people really.
You can sprinkle that stuff in naturally.
I would argue with that, saying that would be the way to go most of the time. And yet, you know, Janet Klonovich is a really best-selling author, and her first person Stephanie Plum books, in the first chapter, Stephanie Plum always tells you exactly what she looks like. She goes, the details. And she says, in case you haven't met me, here are the statistics. I mean, and she basically
gets it out of the way.
And she says, you know, I'm 5'3", but people think I look taller. I've got, you know, curly hair. I've got the slender build of my Hungarian ancestry with the Italian, you know, curls of, you know, et cetera. And, you know, and she says, I moan too much about my breast size. So just a little bit there. And every character that she introduced, she gives the physical, but she's got such a great personality thing that I forgive her the statistic overrun, but I've noticed she does it every single book. Mm-hmm. And it's just straight out. And
how
it's like,
soon is it? Is it like, you know, sentence one,
paragraph
it's one?
Not, it's not sentence one, paragraph one, but it's usually in the first chapter. It's usually after we've had some major thing happen. In the case of one of the books, it was right after her car exploded. And then if you have read her novels...
That could have been any of the books. But.
basically, her first two books, she had a car explode. Yes, yeah, exactly. And then when she turned in her third novel, her editor handed it back to her saying, where's the car explosion? And so she had to go back and write in the car explosion. And it's gotten more and more ridiculous every novel thing, but it's expected. And in one book, it was they were walking out of the grocery store or something. This car explodes, you know, her car just suddenly goes boom, and her friend Lola turns to her and says, oh man, that's a relief. I was wondering when that was going to happen. And they move on. And it was just, there was a reason why her car was bombed to explode, and they get into the mystery of it as to who was trying to kill her and stuff. But, you know, it was like, yeah, they were expecting it. Yeah.
Now, I'm in a camp of, I don't like too much of the hair color, eye color stuff.
And it's
you know,
as a catalog.
Yeah, you know.
It can be done.
Yeah, if you can intersperse little details, you know, maybe she's putting on high, you know, ultra high heels because she's really short and she doesn't want to be so much shorter than her date, or she's wearing flats because she doesn't want to be taller than her date.
Yeah.
But you know, but I love it when you get the details that are not that tell you so much about the person. I mean, if you say, you know, if you say she was a tall redhead, okay, yeah, that's in my mind. But if you tell me, you know, Lila was the kind of girl you don't bring home to mother, that's nothing about physical, but boy, have I got an image in my mind right
me
then.
Too.
And and to me, that's a lot more important than she's a tall redhead.
But then you better not go and say she's blonde if she's got an image of a tall redhead in her mind.
You can't wait too long to bring physical description in, because...
If you take the reverse of this and you don't provide a physical description and you leave it to your reader, the reader is going to form an image, and that image is going to be formed on intangibles that you provide. Like Jane was just saying, you know, the kind of woman that you wouldn't bring home to mom or something. Well, you've got an image of what that person is, and it's going to be probably a lot different than, say, Mike's image, then you really do run into danger if you do start describing things, you know.
I would just say that if you're going to describe somebody or some characteristic, it has to play a part in your story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the look in the mirror and tell you what I look like, it annoys me.
Maybe
that's why it works in the Stephanie Plum books, is that her appearance does make a huge difference in how she interacts.
She does it in a charming, tongue-in-cheek way
and stuff like that. But her appearance makes a huge difference in how she interacts with the people that she interacts with.
Yeah. Other people that tell her the first person,
but
there's the second person.
You know, there are no rules, actually.
Nope.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
there are rules, but they can be broken. He doesn't need to know how to break them.
Yeah, they can be broken. They're not really rules. In the book I'm working on now, for instance, the situation at the beginning of the book was such that I had to break two of those rules. The book opens with the character waking up, and she looks in the mirror and we describe her. And that's necessary because she got there by waking up. And we have to describe her because she's not in the body she expected to be in. And so that's extremely relevant to the situation. So it's not like, you know, where you can let the reader imagine they're like this and only mention the things that are going to be relevant to the story.
I think discovery was critical to the story.
That's right. And so I think it really has to be sensitive to the circumstances.
Right. I want to go back. Suppose you have a redheaded character. You don't have to say they're redheaded, but if you're in Britain where they're called ginger tops, then it's an insult. And they're looked down upon. You really need to say that. But then you go to Ireland or Scotland, who have a lot of the redheaded. Then, you know, they fit in. And so a lot of it depends on the situation and the social situation. That a physical appearance makes them an outcast. You need to tell us what the physical appearance is and what the reaction is to the physical appearance. Why is it important to us as a reader to know that piece of information? If you do in fantasy and you have both different sized characters and shapes of characters and behaviors of characters, I mean, we like to know if they're an ogre or a petite blonde.
Well, there was in critiquing something of Jason's some time ago, we suddenly came to a reference to some of the characters being much, much smaller than I had realized that they were. And that was an example of, okay, I needed this detail sooner because I just, it jolted me out of the story. Because it's like, wait, I didn't know they were hobbit-sized.
Yeah. It also depends on what subgenre you're writing in. I think, because like urban fantasy readers tend to be a lot more visual, perhaps, in what they're trying to picture than, say, hard SF readers would be. So one of them you would need to put some physical description. The other, maybe you just need to put some physical mention of their physicality and then what their mindset is.
Well, I guess it depends on how far outside of the norm it is, too. If you're creating like a whole new character, obviously you're going to need a lot of physical description to describe what it is, or at least something for people to grab onto, you know, for basically talking about a bunch of humans.
One thing I wasn't going to bring up, and I thought we could probably go on and have a whole another meeting about it, is two-dimensional versus three-dimensional characters. Two-dimensional being off-the-shelf characters, the kick-ass, fighting woman like Xena, who, you know, when she first came on the scene was interesting, but you've seen so many spin-offs of that character with a little veneer, maybe a change or a tweak there, or the hard-boiled detective.
Heart of gold.
Or, yeah, the hooker.
The hooker.
Heart
of gold.
Yeah. Slightly soiled.
So Miss Kitty, you know. yeah, no, see, there you start getting into stuff. So, but that's, you know, that's a whole other can of worms.
That would be another 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's well, I think we're about at break time.
Mm-hmm.
We're staying here next session.
You've been listening to the Minnesota Speculative Fiction Writers Group podcast. The MinSpec podcast is produced by Aberstaff and Wiebe, recorded and engineered by myself, Conrad Zero. Whether you're an experienced writer who wants to help others, or an aspiring writer who wants to make your writing better, join us on the web at meetup.com/MNSPEC.